Today on the 21st show, the campaign to be the next U.S. Senator from Illinois. Dick Durbin's decision not to seek re-election means the 21st state has a rare open seat race next year. Among the announced candidates are Congresswoman Robin Kelly, Congressman Raja Krishnamurti, and my guest today, Illinois Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. We'll talk with her live in studio about domestic policy, foreign affairs, and politics in an era dominated by President Donald Trump and his MAGA movement. We also want to put your questions to Lieutenant Governor Stratton, so give us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. I'm Brian Mackey with Juliana Stratton for the hour today on the 21st show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. But first, the news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. 1 week ago today, candidates for office in Illinois could begin circulating petitions. There is a rare opportunity here next year, an open seat for the United States Senate, something we haven't had since 2010. There are three leading Democratic candidates so far, Congressman Raja Krishnamurti, Congresswoman Robin Kelly, and Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. We're planning to bring you in-depth interviews with each of the candidates and Republicans, if any decide to seek the office. Today, Lieutenant Governor Stratton. A brief biography. Juliana Wiggins was born September 8, 1965. She's the daughter of a physician and a teacher raised on the south side of Chicago. Stratton has a degree in broadcast journalism from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and a law degree from DePaul. She had a full career as a lawyer, a mediator, and administrative law judge before her first and only solo campaign when she ran for state representative in 2016. Then in her first and only term as a legislator, a wealthy political outsider named J.B. Pritzker selected her as his running mate. And you know the rest of the story so far. Juliana Stratton joins me live today in our studio in Urbana. Lieutenant Governor Stratton, welcome back to the 21st show.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, we're going to invite you to join us throughout the hour today at 800-222-9455. If you have questions for one of the people who wants to be our next United States Senator, give us a call, 800-222-9455. We also asked members of our texting group to send in questions, and we'll be sharing those throughout the hour. But if you want to join us again, 800-222-9455. All right, basic question of any candidate. Why do you want to be a senator?
Well, I mean, look at what's happening in our country right now. I've been a public servant all my life, and before running for state representative, by the way, I ran for local school council at the public high school that I attended, a public high school on the south side of Chicago. And so throughout my career, I've always sought to figure out ways that I could serve my community, make life better. I had a wonderful example from my parents. As you mentioned, my mother was a public school teacher. She also taught in a community college, taught adults how to read. She taught adult literacy for people who had never learned how to read. And my dad was a community physician. He only worked at safety net hospitals on the south side, taking care of people who were underinsured or uninsured. And so that's what I grew up with, watching their example, and have always seen my role as a public servant as something that I wanted to carry out in any way that I could. But I can say that right now, with the chaos that we are seeing out of Washington, the real urgency of this particular moment, and waking up to my youngest of four daughters, who was in tears, thinking about what the future might look like, even in her young mind, I knew not exactly what the role would be at that time, but I knew that there was more to do. And I got into office because I saw a need and I knew I had to step up and meet the need. And this was another opportunity where I knew I had to do whatever I could. And I think so many ask the question of themselves, what more should I do right now to meet this moment? And for me, it was running for the United States Senate to fight for the people of Illinois and continue doing what we have done over these last 7 years as I've served as Lieutenant Governor alongside Governor J.B. Pritzker, to make sure we provide steady leadership and make people's lives better, because honestly, that is what government is supposed to do.
What have you learned from Governor Pritzker?
Oh, my goodness, so much. We are wonderful partners in governance. I want to tell a little short story about when he asked me to be his running mate. I said to him, this is a wonderful honor, but I don't want to do it if you don't, you know, if you just want me to do what you don't want to do. You know, I don't want to just kind of take the things that you're not interested in. And to his credit, he said, I would have it no other way. I want you to bring your full self to this role. I want you to be a true partner. And we've been partners. And I think what I've learned from him always is that you can have both courage and compassion, that you have to see people where they are and recognize that you can lead with kindness and compassion. But you also have to be bold and be ready to fight. And I'm really proud that right now, so many people say to me, and I would say probably more than any other time since we've been serving, I am so glad that I live in Illinois. I'm so glad that you and the governor are fighting for us. And it really resonates right now because I know that there are so many people in other states that don't have that safety and protection that Illinoisans believe that they have.
As a senator, part of your role would be advice and consent. Of course, that's with regard to presidential appointments. But what's an example of where you gave Governor Pritzker some advice on something on which you disagreed with him?
You know, there's not a lot of examples of where we've disagreed, to be quite honest. I mean, we talk and what I would say is, first of all, we're two very different people from two different backgrounds, growing up in different circumstances. And so I would say that in general, there are times when we would discuss issues where I would come from it from a different standpoint. I mean, I think about, for example, when I ran, I called him about a year and a half ago and said, you know, we've done so much around women's reproductive freedom, for example, and protecting reproductive rights in this state. But Black women are still dying three times more, you know, more than our white counterparts through pregnancy-related complications. And it was just it's those kinds of moments that I would say where my experience, my life and lived experience is able to kind of come in and say, here's something that I'm thinking about. And he said, let's do something about it. And we passed the Birth Equity Initiative, and I was grateful to be able to lead that effort for our administration and work with some incredible partners in the General Assembly. We now cover lactation consultants and doulas and midwives, whether you're covered by Medicaid or private insurance, with no copay to help save women's lives, particularly Black women who are more likely to die. So that's an example of where what I would say happens more often, which is our different life experiences might have we might see things a little differently or bring a different angle, but, you know, ultimately we can work together, hear each other out, and find whatever's best for the people that we represent.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Illinois' Lieutenant Governor, Juliana Stratton, who is also a candidate for the United States Senate in the Democratic primary next year, seeking to succeed Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, who says he is not seeking re-election. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number to call in, 800-222-9455. We did ask listeners in our texting group if they had questions for you. Tana in rural Menard County asks, do you have a faith practice? If so, what are the most important tenets of your faith?
I do have a faith practice, and my faith is very important to me. And I could say that in these very troubling times, I lean on my faith quite a bit. And I think that the tenets that really stick out to me is recognizing that we care for one another, that we, you know, that it's not about our own individual interest, but it's the interest of all of us together. And that, you know, that old golden rule of do unto others as you would have them do unto you, that I'm always thinking about how I would want to be treated. And I think about that as a leader, but I think about it as a mom. I think about it as a wife. I think about it just as a human being. What are the ways that I can make sure that I am operating in a way in giving out to others what I would like to receive from others and really seeing the humanity in everyone. You know, I always say that, you know, sometimes it's difficult because we have a lot of division in these times. We have a lot of polarization. But I always try to find the good. I always try to find something that can help me to better understand where people are coming from. And I'm, again, it's not always easy when there's, you know, so much bumping heads. But it's the way that I've always led, and I try to do that even to this day. All of those things are informed by my faith.
Did you, and maybe I missed it, is it a specific, like, a denomination or that you're a part of?
Protestant. Christian.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Christian.
Okay.
Yes.
And she, one of her follow-up questions is, you know, you do not have to have faith to be a moral person. What guides you in making moral decisions?
You don't have to have faith to be a moral person, but I think, you know, I talked about my parents, and I think that there's always something within me that is asking, is this, from a true and authentic place, the right thing to do? And really kind of looking at that question of right versus wrong, and what is the right thing to do? And the right thing to do is not always the easiest thing to do. And I think right now we're in a place where, you know, sometimes people might find it easier to be in the comfortable place. And what I've been saying as I've been on the trail is that this is a time to not necessarily be in the most comfortable place. In fact, most history is made in the most uncomfortable places. And this is a time to be courageous. So I think that there's this combination of both. Is this a moment where I can do the right thing? Is this a moment where I'm experiencing some level of fear or hesitancy? And if so, in those moments, is it also the time to be courageous? And that guides me a lot through these times.
So I have a list in front of me of 46 questions, which obviously we're not going to get to all of those. And there's domestic policy and foreign affairs. But I do want this to be a dialogue with our listeners who are across Illinois, Rockford and Peoria, Bloomington, Normal, Champaign, Urbana, Springfield, Carbondale, the Quad Cities. And so let's go now to the phones. Mark is calling us from Champaign on line one. Mark, thank you for calling in.
Yes, sir. I'd like to ask the Lieutenant Governor this question. Heard with alarm reports this morning about National Guard troops on the ground in Washington, D.C. And I'd like to ask the Lieutenant Governor, who is the person who is going to lead us in opposition to this American president's attempt at creating a police state?
Well, thank you for your question. I mean, what you have raised is an important issue, not just for the people in D.C., but for all of us as Americans. It is, to me, what we are fighting against, and I think all of us play a role in that. I'm certainly doing my part, and it's one of the reasons why I'm running for United States Senate, to fight back against what I am clear is a real rise in authoritarianism that we are seeing in this country. To think about the military being used against American citizens is unconscionable. And, you know, we have made it clear here in Illinois that we are going to stand up and fight back. You heard the president say that he also is thinking about Chicago. And so that certainly affects our state. We are going to fight back. We do not see him having any authority. He does not have any authority over the Illinois National Guard. But these kinds of threats to scare people, to disorient people, to make people believe that we are powerless, it is very concerning, and it is why I am doing this, why I'm on this run. When you ask, you know, who's going to bring the leadership, I'm one of the people that has been able to travel this state and look people in the eye, and when they tell me I am looking for a fighter, I'm looking for someone to stand up and fight against me, I look them back in the eye and say, I will do just that. But I also think that this is a time that all of us have to recognize we cannot be silent. We all must be raising our voices. We all must be sounding the alarm and making it loud and clear that this is not normal, that we are not going to accept this, and we must speak out and demand that we all step up and do whatever we can to speak out against this type of action. It is not normal and it is not acceptable.
Sticking with the area of law enforcement, there are those who say that Democrats, one of the reasons Democrats lost the presidential election last year and control of Congress is because they were perceived as not taking border security seriously enough. And, you know, abolish ICE was a popular catchphrase among progressives some years ago. But now we have ICE agents, you know, operating as a paramilitary force, showing up without uniforms and name tags, driving armored vehicles, wearing face masks. I mean, do you think there should be some accountability in the future for what is happening now with those agents, rank and file agents? I mean, are we at a point where you would support abolishing ICE, for example?
Look, what I have said from the very beginning is that, first of all, we are seeing actions being taken against our neighbors that has caused so much fear in our communities, especially in our immigrant communities. We saw Kristi Noem come back to Illinois. You know, the first time she came to Springfield, she had to cut the trip short because of people rising up and raising their voices. And then she came back just recently. What I would say is that, number one, it should scare everyone that people who are wearing masks with uniforms with no markings on them are snatching people off of the streets with no due process, a fundamental principle and foundational to our United States Constitution. We should all be appalled by that. And I would support, as a senator, the legislation that has been proposed by Senator Padilla to make sure that, you know, those markings, something that identifies the official capacity of any ICE agent, mm-hmm. would be marked.
All right. I'm sorry to interrupt you. We need to take a break on the program. We're on a fixed clock here. We're going to continue this conversation and get into other topics when we return. Again, if you want to join us today, the number is 800-222-9455. More with United States Senate candidate and Lieutenant Governor of Illinois, Juliana Stratton. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking with Illinois Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, one of the leading Democratic candidates for the United States Senate, seeking to succeed Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, who is not running for re-election after a long career in the Congress. We're planning to bring you interviews with the other leading candidates as well later as we continue through this election cycle. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. All right. Before the break, we were talking about ICE agents showing up wearing masks, not wearing badges. You said you supported, California U.S. Senator Padilla's legislation to require that. What about the idea, though, of accountability for the people who are, you know, making decisions now to behave in a way that some people view as lawless at, you know, at worst, or perhaps certainly outside of the norms of American law enforcement?
Well, it specifically what you're talking about when you want to kind of go back to what you talked about. I mean, look, as I was starting to say, we are seeing people snatched off the streets. When they talk about, you know, Governor Pritzker and I have said from the very beginning that if somebody has been convicted of a violent crime, that we would work in partnership with federal agents to make sure that they are removed from our state and our country. I mean, that kind of accountability when it comes to people convicted of a violent crime, but that's not what we're talking about when we're listening, when we're seeing people being snatched off our streets, our neighbors. They're going to schools, they're going to houses of worship, they're going to business places. And so that is a directive that's coming from the top. This is what's coming from the Trump White House. They say that this is something to protect public safety, but that's not what this is rooted in at all. We do need to have a real path to, you know, citizenship for so many people, including continuing the great work that Senator Durbin started to have a pathway to citizenship for Dreamers. We need to make sure that we have a secure border. We need to make sure that people who are asylum seekers have a real path to due process and can go through the process so people aren't lingering in the system. But for these actors, that again is a directive from the top, and it is another example of Donald Trump trying to intimidate, instill fear, and pit people against one another. And we have to be strong, clear voices that that's not who we are. And, you know, I was very grateful that the courts recently demonstrated that the Trust Act is legal, that we're following the law here in Illinois. That's what we do, and we will continue to do that.
Would you, though, support, you know, ending ICE, coming up with a new way of you know, this wouldn't be the first time the federal government has reorganized some of its functions in terms of Homeland Security, other agencies like that? I mean, is the agency so fundamentally tainted and broken now that something different needs to happen?
I think an agency that is getting a directive, I mean, look at what the difference is with this president. And that's what the real difference is in terms of how we are seeing ICE being utilized. So we have to understand all of the chaos. I mean, Donald Trump and congressional Republicans, quite frankly, have led us into a five-alarm fire. It's not just what we are seeing happening on the streets. It's what happened in D.C. It's this threat against using the National Guard against, you know, not just people in D.C., but people in Chicago and other states. It's looking at what's happening with Texas and the Texas Democrats and redistricting and trying to silence the voices of Black and Latino legislators and communities. This is a pattern with this president in particular. And that's why I talk about it as the rise of authoritarianism. He is weaponizing this agency against communities. And so we need strong, steady leadership in Washington. And that's what I intend to bring.
You check a lot of boxes among traditional Democratic Party values, right? You're highly educated. I think you come across as bringing a lawyer's preparation to what you're doing here. You're a marathon runner and a triathlete. And yet, In our political environment today, it seems like, you know, social media, for example, rewards those in politics who come across as, you know, more raw, provocative. I wonder how you go about distinguishing yourself in this environment.
I think the first thing that I always kind of have at the forefront for me in distinguishing myself is being authentically me. I know what my experiences are. I know the life that I have lived growing up on the south side of Chicago. I know what it's like to be a mother. I know what it's like, which has led me to politics, which was caring for my mother who had Alzheimer's. And caring for her in the final years of her life while also being a mom, while also working full time and being a career woman, it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. It's also something that I'd do again in a heartbeat if I could. But I bring those stories and those experiences because those are the kinds of struggles that everyday Illinoisans have. And my goal as an authentic person, just as Juliana Stratton, not Lieutenant Governor Stratton, but Juliana Stratton, a wife and a mother, a daughter, a caregiver, that is what I try to connect with people. You know, I think there's not this formula. I don't think right now people are looking for sort of this formula. This is, you know, or boxes to check. I think people are looking for real authenticity, and they want to know that somebody is going to hear them, who knows their struggles. I'm from a family. I have to budget, and I sit out. My husband and I have to go through, hey, we have this new expense. What's going to happen? That's what people are feeling right now, especially in this economy where so many people are looking for life to be more affordable. So I think for me, it's connecting with people, just being real and genuine, listening to them, understanding their struggles. And I think that's what people are looking for, not just someone who checks a box, not someone who just has the talking points, but somebody who can talk to them from a real space. And that's what I always try to do.
Well, on the question of the affordability of life, we got some questions from listeners on that. Danny in DeKalb sent us a text message. How will you protect individuals, especially children, who are currently enrolled in Medicaid now that the federal government has made moves to drastically cut the program?
Well, this is one of the key issues. I mean, I thank you for that question. I just talked about what drove me to run for office in the first place was in 2015, 10 years ago, caring for my mother who had Alzheimer's. And the governor at the time, Bruce Rauner, and my state representative at the time were working together to cut health care for seniors. And that's what led me to run for office, because I could not believe that as I'm caring for my mother, and she did not use the state benefits, we did whatever we could to try to get her the health care she needed, but I knew that there were so many like my mom who were going to lose their health care benefits. That's what led me to run for office, and I've been fighting for that issue ever since. And right now, running for the United States Senate, we're 10 years later, we see the same thing happening. Millions of Americans are going to be stripped of their health care, including children, as you asked in your question. We are doing everything that we can here in Illinois to fight back. And I want to commend the leadership of our attorney general, who's going to court to fight. We are doing everything we can to speak out and say we're not going to stand for it. But I think we've been very clear as well that it's going to be impossible to fill the gap from the cuts from the federal government to make sure that all coverage continues. And I do want to say this. Everybody is going to be impacted, not just children. Everyone will be impacted by these cuts to Medicaid, because everyone's insurance premiums will go up. Everyone's copays will go up. Hospitals will close, particularly in rural communities. And we have to speak out and fight against this. They passed the bill, and we have to make sure that we are making it clear of how this is going to impact people, including people who voted for this president. I want to see universal health care coverage. That's something that I'm going to fight for in Washington, D.C. as the next United States Senator from Illinois. I want to see Medicare for all, because I think health care is a right, not a privilege, and we need to be at a place where people are threatening to take away health care, that we guarantee universal health care coverage so any and every American, when you are sick, you can get the care you need, and that includes for the children of our state.
And on that note, we had Sue and Elgin asking about guaranteed universal health care. Does that take the form of Medicare for all? Is it, you know, sort of single payer? Is that where, you know, the Bernie Sanders type approach? Is that where you would see America should be heading?
I think right now Americans should be heading to look at big, bold ideas and do whatever we can to get people the health care coverage that they need. I would support the Medicare for all bill. But what I could say is there's lots of different paths to getting there. You just talked about a couple of them. And I think no matter what, we should all be working on making sure that when people are sick, they get the care they need, especially at a time when we're seeing health care being threatened. To be a country where someone is sick and they have to drive hours, especially when some of these rural hospitals will close, and they have to drive hours to get the care. The fact that we have health care deserts in our state, maternal health care deserts, I wanted to clarify, where women are having children, but there's no hospital, no OB-GYNs available in their region, and they have to travel to safely deliver a baby. It's unacceptable to me, and I'm sure for so many people who are not getting the care that they need, you deserve it. And I'm going to fight for that as your next senator.
If you're just joining us, it's the 21st Show. We're speaking with Illinois' Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, who is one of the candidates for United States Senator seeking to succeed outgoing U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. 800-222-9455 to join us today. 800-222-9455. You know, on this point, there was a Washington Post article, I think it was yesterday, had the headline, "Mothers Are Leaving the Workforce, Erasing Pandemic Gains." We've seen a decline in women's labor force participation this year. The MAGA movement, and I guess even some liberal women now, are sort of like reclaiming more traditional gender roles, right? Focusing on raising children rather than their own careers. How do you see that trend in America?
Well, good, first...
Yeah, good thing, bad thing? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I'm going to speak to the trend of women leaving the workforce more specifically. I just wrote an op-ed myself that was in the Chicago Tribune a couple of weeks ago about black women that are particularly leaving the workforce, being pushed out, not from a choice, but being pushed out. And I think we have to recognize that that's happening more and more. I mean, look at what's happening in Washington, D.C., first and foremost, with so many people being fired from their federal jobs and the impact that that's having. I read an article. I cannot recite the numbers, but it's having an impact on the economy. It's having an impact on the Illinois economy. Think about how many people in federal jobs are losing their jobs and what that means in terms of the economy and being able to care for their families and have money circulating throughout the local economy. Women have always faced so many challenges, and I chair the Illinois Council on Women and Girls and lead an initiative called We Thrive, which is really focused on building confidence in women around our money and finances. And what I would say is that women continue to face barriers, whether it is the pay gap, whether it is negotiating their salaries and being undercut in those negotiations, not being paid what they're worth, but also the access to childcare, which is a big issue. And we've done so much here in Illinois to in preschool deserts, we've added 11,000 preschool seats. So women face so many considerations around staying in the workforce. But I think that it is quite concerning that we would see women leaving the workforce in such droves, many whom may be the sole providers in their homes, many who may be losing benefits, many who may have to be caregivers, who are going to continue to see ever widening gaps between them, between women and men as they go throughout their lives. They're going to be less prepared for retirement. They're not going to have the benefits they need if they need to get them. So I can't speak to any individual decision about, you know, why someone is leaving. But what I can say is that there are real disturbing trends around women leaving the workforce because there's this overall thought that we should be barefoot, pregnant, and at home. And for that, I have always been a strong voice for saying women should be able to decide what is best for ourselves and our futures. And that is one of the reasons why even reproductive freedom does have a tie to the economic issues, because starting a family is expensive and women should not be forced into that decision if that's not what they want. So I'm for women deciding for themselves what's best for their futures. But I also think that we have to look at the trends that are happening and why we're being pushed out of the workforce and what impact that's going to have on our families, ourselves, and our communities.
We need to take a break in less than 2 minutes. I want to try and get at least one more domestic policy question in, and then we have some foreign affairs questions as well. But we have talked on the show about what's been happening in Texas and how some Texas Democrats have sought refuge in Illinois. I know you appeared with some of them, I think it was last week, protesting, you know, further gerrymandering in their state. Joe in Charleston asks, considering the tit-for-tat gerrymandering that may take place, would you be interested in a constitutional amendment to make congressional redistricting in all states a nonpartisan effort like some states have?
Look, right now, what I'm focused on is that Donald Trump and Texas Republicans are focused on a real power grab. And I think what we've been clear about here and what I heard from them, the Texas Democrats that I met with and had some time to be with them on this Sunday at church service, is that they are concerned especially about the racialized nature of this gerrymandering and how it is seeking specifically to exclude Black and Latino representation and voices. And so we need to right now fight with everything that we have, and we need to recognize that this is not an issue that's limited to Texas. This is an issue where people are going to be pushing. They've thrown out the rule book, and they are trying to do whatever they can to grab this power. And we need to fight back against it. It goes back to the things that I said earlier. It's the rise of authoritarianism.
800-222-9455. If you have questions for Illinois Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, she's running for the United States Senate. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with United States Senate candidate and Lieutenant Governor of Illinois, Juliana Stratton. She's a Democrat running to succeed Dick Durbin, who is not running for re-election when his term ends in 2027. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. I do want to briefly finish up on the issue of gerrymandering, because Democrats drew a map in Illinois that is, I think it's fair to say, favors Democrats significantly. The elections typically break down here for governor, U.S. senator. It's often about 55 to 40, Democrat versus Republican. But the map is a much higher percentage than 55 of seats are in Congress. Governor Pritzker had said that he would, you know, not sign a map that was authored by politicians when he ran in 2018, and ultimately he did. Is Illinois part of the problem with American representation and gerrymandering?
You know, when I hear the question of Illinois kind of phrased in the context of what's happening in Texas right now, I say it's like, to me, comparing apples and oranges. First of all, the maps are drawn as a result of the U.S. Census every 10 years. And here we are in Texas because of a phone call from the President of the United States, Donald Trump. Texas Republicans in the middle of this 10-year period want to now redraw maps. And they want to do so because they know that coming up with the 2026 elections, that he fears he's going to lose. And so now let's come up with something else that we can do. That is not the process. And I cannot underemphasize the level of race playing a part in this, what's happening in Texas, and really disenfranchising so many Black and Latino voters in that state. It's unconscionable. We just recently, this year, we're celebrating the 60th anniversary. You know, you talked about my being born. You started off today with you know, sharing my birth date. And as I was born, the Voting Rights Act was signed into law by President Johnson. My father, Henry, that community physician who has impacted my life, marched from Selma to Montgomery to protest people not having access to the vote, to the ballot, because of their race. And here we are 60 years later, and we're seeing the same games being played, and it's dangerous. Everyone should have the right to have their voice represented. They should have the right to vote. And we've seen an attack from this president on voting rights from the very beginning, questioning our elections, questioning election results, and now trying to disenfranchise Black and brown people. We are not, that is apples and oranges from what's happening in here in Illinois. And we all must speak up, because what's happening in Texas can happen in any state in this nation if we are not careful and if we are not vocal in raising our voices.
One of the issue areas I do want to get to, which is part would be part of your remit as a United States senator, is foreign affairs. It's been we're coming up on 2 years since Israel has been carrying out military operations in Gaza after the Hamas attack there. Is what Israel is doing there a genocide?
Well, look, what we're seeing in Israel, in Gaza right now, is clearly heart-wrenching. And I say that as a mother, just to see some of the images that we are seeing. And I've made it very clear that right now we should all be very focused on getting humanitarian aid, food, and whatever's needed. Israel should be doing that. The United States should be working on that. And it needs to happen immediately, and it needs to happen right now. We have to make sure that we continue to work and not get, you know, do anything that would jeopardize. We need to make sure that we get the hostages returned, the hostages which are still being held by Hamas. We need a ceasefire to bring peace and end the violence in that region. And we need to make sure that that peace is sustained. So that's what I want to see. And that's what I will be working for. And we cannot get it without steady leadership in Washington. And that's one of the reasons why I'm running.
There are a lot of progressive voters, we hear from them on this show, who want to hear Democratic officials saying it's a genocide. How do you respond to that?
I respond in the way that I said. I don't agree. In fact, I've strongly disagreed with many of the ways that this war has been carried out by Prime Minister Netanyahu. But I also speak very clearly about what is happening with the humanitarian crisis that is happening and the need for the hostages to be returned to their families. I want to see a ceasefire. I want to see an end to this violence. But I also have to remember, as you just noted, how this all started on October 7th and the horrific terrorist attacks by Hamas and what has unfolded since. So I want to see peace. I want to see that happen. But we need something, we need the hostages to be returned as well.
There have been multiple United States Senate votes to send money to Israel, or I should say weapons to Israel, largely funding for weapons in Israel. Would you have supported those votes? Were you in the Senate at the time?
I would not have supported that vote. I don't want to do anything that could jeopardize the long-term or put at risk what I believe should be the long-term goals, which is hostages being returned to their families, a true ceasefire, and bringing peace to the region. And I cannot say that those kinds of resolutions, I don't know, that could have put all of that at risk. And that would be my concern.
Do you think an increasing number of countries are recognizing a Palestinian state? Do you think America should go down that road?
Again, I don't think any type of I don't want to focus on anything other than what I think should be the ultimate goal at this moment. I think that there's going to be a lot of things talked about and proposed, but right now, anything that could jeopardize the hostages being returned home, that's not where I want to put my focus. Anything that would jeopardize a true ceasefire, anything that would jeopardize our getting to lasting peace, I want to stay focused on what I think is most important, and it's bringing that leadership at this time. And we don't have it in Washington.
Also in the news this week is the war in Ukraine. President Trump is supposedly meeting one-on-one with Vladimir Putin of Russia in Alaska this Friday. Does the United States have an interest in a free Ukraine?
Well, anytime that we're talking about protecting democracy, the United States has an interest in democracy around the world. We are seeing dictators, someone who's a dictator, and the rise of authoritarianism. And here we are seeing Donald Trump meeting with Putin. And anytime we see, this person who's supposed to be, the leader of the free world, deciding to side with dictators and do things that are not in the best interest of the United States, it's concerning to us. We have always been looked at as a country that other countries look to for leadership. That is not the case. And so I think any time that we're talking about preserving democracy, that's important, and that's an important interest of the United States.
Should the United States, there are people who are happy, I think probably in different parts of America's political spectrum, left and right, who are probably happy about America sort of pulling back from its role as a global superpower. Do you think America should seek to maintain or reemerge, or however you want to phrase it, as a global superpower?
I think we should always be an example of what the power of democracy is. I think we should always be an example to the world of what it means when you have the right to vote, when you have assembled under the Constitution, when you protect people's rights, when you can voice your opinion, when you have the right to protest. I think that's an example of and what it means to have people from differing perspectives and such diversity. But unfortunately, that is not what this president is seeking to maintain. In fact, he's seeking to undermine it. And so I think at this particular moment, the reason why it's not about just, I think certainly we have had a positive influence. But I think that for me right now in this moment, we are looking at a president who is undermining our very democracy. And that is what I am speaking out against. And that is what I believe we have. You know, we've had some, we're not perfect. This country is not perfect. But the idea of being a democracy and what that means is something I believe, I very much believe in, and I want to preserve.
The last things I want to ask you about are, you know, there are more people who don't vote than vote, right? We talk about people who are on the left, people who are on the right. Lloyd in Danville wants to know what, how you can get more Illinois non-voters to actually vote.
Well,
be engaged with politics, I guess, is the, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to be engaged in politics, I always say people are engaged in politics whether they know they are or not, quite frankly, just by living. But look, we have to really address what matters to people right now. And from my estimation, and as I'm running for United States Senate, there are three particular areas that I am focused on. Number one, how do we make life more affordable? When people feel like you don't care about that issue, sometimes they check out. That you can talk about all of these big issues, but what I know is what I'm feeling in my household when I'm trying to pay my bills, when I'm trying to get my kids, you know, school supplies and their new first day of school outfit, when I go to the grocery store and I see how groceries are, you know, the prices are rising. And remember, Donald Trump told us he was going to address all of that on day one. It has not happened. So we have to meet people where they are. Number one, how do we make life more affordable? We did that here in Illinois by raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. What that did was it lifted so many people out of poverty. People who were in low-wage jobs, $15 an hour, lifting them out of poverty. The federal minimum wage is still $7.25. I want to raise that. We have to talk about where people are. We see Donald Trump just gave tax breaks to the ultra wealthy through that so-called big, beautiful bill, as he calls it. I want to see a tax break, tax breaks for middle-class families. And I want to pay for it with those by taxing and giving a tax increase to those making $1 million or more. That's what I want to see. That helps real people with their real issues of affordability. I want to see us create more opportunities for the middle class by restoring the Department of Education. I want to make sure that we have more opportunities in trade and technical schools. I want to make sure that we invest in grants for small businesses. That's what I want to do as your next United States Senator. And I want to protect our rights and our democracy because they are under attack. I want to protect voting rights. I want to make sure that we, you know, restore the rights of Roe versus Wade. I want to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, and I want to do what I said earlier, which is pass universal health care and guarantee health care for every American. That also is going to play a big role in life being more affordable for people. Because there are people who are making a decision this very day, do I get health care or do I pay my bills? And that should not be the case. So when we can talk about the things that people really care about, what's affecting their life on a day-to-day basis, I hope people will get more engaged. But when people feel like you're sort of talking about these issues that are sort of out there and they can't see how it connects to their daily life, they're not engaged. And I want them to be. And that's why I'm talking about what matters to them. It's why I launched my Keeping It Real listening tour, that I'm going all around the state to keep it real with people and hear from them what matters. I want to take the voices of Illinoisans with me, but when people feel like you go, I want to just say this, Brian, I'm the only candidate in this race not accepting corporate PAC dollars. And I'm doing that because I don't want to represent the special interest of corporations when I get to D.C. I want to represent Illinois' working families. And that's real for me because I know that people are feeling like people get to Washington and they forget all about me. They want my vote, and then they leave, and they don't pay attention to me. I've been a leader for these last 7 years, and I'm going to keep doing that.
Juliana Stratton is the Lieutenant Governor of Illinois. She is a candidate for the United States Senate. I should say the Democratic nomination to be the United States Senator from Illinois, succeeding Dick Durbin. We plan to bring you interviews with the other candidates on future programs. Lieutenant Governor Stratton, thank you for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
And that is all the time for us today. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're going to revisit our conversation on that documentary that raised the question of whether Abraham Lincoln might have been gay. That's coming up tomorrow here on the 21st Show, which is produced by Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thank you for listening. We will talk with you again tomorrow.